Hello and welcome to the podcast from the Foundation for Science and Technology. This week we're discussing nuclear fusion in the UK from a technical, commercial and policy perspective. With me to discuss all things fusion is Warwick Matthews, Chief Executive Officer of Tokamak Energy. Warwick Matthews, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Gavin, yeah, pleasure to be here and spend some time talking fusion with you.
Fantastic. Well, let's dive straight in with fusion. What are the key advantages of energy generation via nuclear fusion, if we can get to that point?
So I think first up, let's have a look at the future energy demand that we have on our global system. You know, whether you're looking at electricity from a developing continent like Africa, or you're looking at the incredible demands of next generation AI, agentic AI, that will have big AI companies effectively resembling the same energy demand of a medium-sized country. We need to handle that demand at the same time that we need to decarbonize and get to net zero. And that's the wicked challenge, wicked problem that the world has. Really, it's fusion coming into a portfolio of energy solutions and what it can offer. And then we have hard to abate sectors, industries where the challenge isn't electricity, they're looking for industrial heat in many cases. So think about how do we produce all of the green fuels we talk about so often? How are we making hydrogen? How are we making sustainable aviation fuel? How do we produce metals or fertilizers in the future? And that's really where fusion can come in with a unique offering, which is to provide baseload power for electricity, but dispatchable power and industrial heat for those sectors. And because fusion is a different process, we're fusing atoms together, we're not splitting an atom, and it has no runaway potential that the machine's trying to contain, then we can put this in populated areas, we can put this in industrial settings, and so you can have your energy solution, heat solution alongside your industrial process.
But we don't have those at the moment. And obviously the reason we don't have those at the moment is it's really hard. And there's a number of technical challenges. So what are some of these challenges? Why is fusion so difficult to do?
So why difficult to do? So let's start with what's going on in a fusion reaction. And effectively, you know, the world's been powered by fusion for a long, 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 long time. All of those yeah. Solar panels are powered by fusion and the fusion that's occurring in the sun. And in the sun, you have both the temperature and pressure conditions to allow fusion to happen every day. We're trying to recreate that process of a star or a sun on Earth as fusion companies. And our chosen way of doing that is in a device called a tokamak, which is using magnetic confinement to contain a plasma under extremely high, strong magnetic fields to create those pressures or densities, and then achieving those incredibly high temperatures. In fact, getting much hotter than the sun, because in a device, you don't have the mass of the sun. So we're going up to 100 million degrees Celsius plus for the threshold for commercial fusion. And we're exerting a very, very strong magnetic field with superconducting magnet technology. And the great news is we have done that. In our own R&D device we have here on site, ST40, we have created those conditions. Now it's about making that a sustainable, industrialized device that can be providing power at scale, 500 megawatts of electrical output, 1.2 gigawatts of thermal energy, and then rolling those devices out at pace. There are remaining challenges that we face, but we have overcome big ones along the way. The magnet technology that we lead on is a good example of that. What machine learning and AI can do for the control system of these devices is a huge leap forward, but we need to make them industrialized and reliable and robust. And that gets into things like the shielding materials that we require, the material science that we're working with partners around the world, and the ability to breed the fuel, the tritium fuel, in the device itself. Here are some of the remaining challenges, and that's what industry and governments are galvanizing around to address those final challenges for fusion.
And I know there's a number of technical options for both generating and sustaining the fusion reactions. I know people have been working on slightly different versions. It's quite possible all of them will succeed, but just help us out briefly to talk us through some of these options, because it can be confusing from people from outside.
Yeah, there are. It's good that there are different approaches, right? And the great thing about fusion is that it is a supply constrained market for at least a century once we crack it. So there is room for plenty of answers. It is not a one answer for fusion scenario. It's not a VHS Betamax for those who can even remember that scenario. So we're a tokamak company. There are others who are pioneering the use of tokamaks. There's a great amount of pedigree and knowledge around tokamaks, government programs. The conventional tokamak is a torus shape or a donut shape. We happen to be driving a spherical tokamak. Looks a bit more like a cored apple, but essentially the same theory behind both of them. There are other magnetic confinement devices. There are stellarators, which are intricate. They almost look like a Mobius strip, a twisted design, very efficient from a control of plasma point of view, come with their own challenges. But there are various countries and nations driving stellarators from Germany through to the US through to Japan. There is inertial confinement or thermal confinement, and that's really a very different approach. Some of the audience will no doubt have heard of the breakthroughs at the Lawrence Livermore facility in California. And that is using lasers to energize a target pellet and create fusion conditions with a very, very small target of fuel. And there are different ways of creating that ignition with a target. And there are other designs out there as well, mirror devices, Z-pinch devices, all of which are going after the same goal, which is to have a sustained fusion reaction that can then be harnessed for a baseload power source with a net energy gain coming out of those devices.
Mm-hmm. And it's this sustaining the fusion reaction that I understand is the hardest thing. Starting it isn't so bad, but holding the plasma or whatever device you've got and it keeps going, that's the really difficult bit.
It is difficult, say, for high performance plasmas. Mm-hmm. Yes. Our first device that we had as Tokamak Energy, ST25, was a small device. It held plasma for 29 hours, but it was a lower performance plasma. When we start to push up into the temperatures that we need for commercial fusion, and especially moving into a deuterium-tritium reaction, that's what we're all seeking to crack.
So I wanted to ask you about the sort of UK policy on fusion. The UK's recently decided not to rejoin the Euratom programme, whereas it has rejoined Horizon Europe, and obviously it was a member of Euratom when it was a member state of the EU. So what are the implications of sort of not going into Euratom for UK fusion research and commercialization?
Yeah, well, that's a very, very topical question and one that's being put into action now. So after a lot of work, Minister Bowie was able to announce the Fusion Futures program back end of last year. And that program dedicates a £650 million budget, really relevant number, relevant investment by the UK into the acceleration of fusion technologies, but notably looking to build a supply chain, build technologies and fusion relevant companies in the UK that can then export this technology in the future. And that £650 million to be deployed by 2027 is broken down into a number of major projects. One of them is looking at the challenge I mentioned earlier about how you breed tritium in the device with a number of concepts for what's referred to as a breeder blanket. There is one around stimulating the industry and the supply chain. And then it goes into transfer of technologies, into international participation, and a great deal of funding for skills development. So we've come out of the Euratom agreement. Great deal of scientific research and advancement came through our participation in the ITER program. But really, this is an opportunity for the UK to continue to lead in fusion. It's brilliant to say that the UK is global leader in fusion, and we need to maintain that position. We're front of the grid. It's very easy to get passed by other nations. We've got to make sure we remain there. So we're really enthusiastic about that investment and what it offers for private fusion companies in the UK like us.
Well, let's talk about you. Let's talk about Tokamak Energy. Where do you fit into all of this? What are you working on, and how does this new strategy take you forward?
Yeah, so we have two key technologies. We've got a lot going on, but if you boil it down, we have two technologies, and they are a spherical tokamak and high-temperature superconducting magnets. So I'll talk a little bit about those. We believe that a spherical tokamak is the most efficient, most compact device, that compared to a conventional tokamak, we can occupy a smaller footprint, have a smaller device size, but within there are efficiencies of the device itself. Its ability to have a self-driving plasma, meaning that you're getting the most out of the machine. You're not having to consume the machine's power to power itself. That's always been the vision of our founders, to drive that technology forward. And one of the neat inventions, necessity, the mother of invention, has been to industrialize the use of high temperature superconducting magnets. And we use a material called REBCO, rare earth barium copper oxide, in an extremely efficient form, deposited onto a thin, very thin layer in HTS tape that we buy from the supply chain. We have partner companies like Furukawa in Japan that we buy this tape from. But we're able to, with our proprietary technology, wind that into very, very high performing magnet coils. And with the technology we've developed over the last 10 years or so of working in this state of the art, we can make them very robust, very well protected magnets. So we have something special, some unique intellectual property and know-how around that technology. That's what we're taking forward. Along the way, we are also able to commercialize those magnets into other markets. And in the last year or two, more markets have been emerging that can benefit from this HTS technology. How that positions us for the future? Well, you know, we want to be present in many programs for fusion. We believe we have a lot to bring into public-private partnerships. So that's working with governments in the UK, in the US, in Japan as examples, to help develop and accelerate fusion programs. And we have a great opportunity to commercialize those magnets into, you know, other sectors, from space to transportation to even ultra large offshore wind platforms in the future.
Well, let's focus on the fusion market for now. How do you see that developing and growing over, say, the next decade? And obviously there's the UK, so talk about the UK first, but you've already talked about you being a global place. But how is this market changing?
Well, the push is on now to get to devices, fusion pilot plants that are generating a, you know, net energy, proving out the concept of a first of a kind, so we can then get into mobilizing a supply chain to roll out the nth of a kind devices and go as fast as we can to get as many of these things out there. So you're seeing various countries around the world adopt an approach around their fusion pilot plant program. In the US, our US subsidiary is present in that program as well. It's about adopting several technologies, several different companies into a milestone-based program. Here in the UK, informed by operating the JET, Joint European Torus at Culham, for 40 years, UKAEA has decided its next generation machine will be a spherical tokamak. And it's a spherical tokamak enabled by HTS magnets, very similar to the technology we want to pursue. That is an extremely symbolic move. It's sweeping away a coal-fired power station in West Burton, North Nottinghamshire. Brilliant move for that local region, but also for the UK to develop the technology and the companies for its next major device. And we see that we can bring a lot of value to that. STEP is a 2040 machine on paper. Other countries are pushing for a 2035 sort of timescale for their pilot plants. We need to mature and perfect these technologies. We have work to do, remaining challenges to address. But that's the sort of time frame from mid-2035 for the first machines.
And you talked about earlier the UK having a sort of a technical lead in fusion. Can UK companies, yours and others, start to take a major share in this kind of global fusion market? And what does the UK government need to do to make sure that that happens?
So absolutely, yes. And we're choosing to partner with global companies around the rollout. But equally, we're very focused on what we can do here in the UK to develop this technology and create the UK's exports in what will be this century's most valuable technology. What can the UK do? Well, it's doing some great things already. And the Fusion Pilot Plant, the Fusion Futures Program is a good example of that. We need to continue to support industry and technology development through the STEP program. That is set up not as a government program, but as a catalyst for the industry. And we need to maintain that position, continue to fund STEP and drive it forward. Regulation is another area of focus. And the UK, again, has led on having a pragmatic answer for fusion regulation. It's not a fission process, as we talked about earlier. And in the UK, it's not nuclear regulated. And the relevant point here is around the speed and cost of rollout of devices. It's not a nuclear process, so we won't regulate it in that way. That allows us to be much faster in rolling out devices globally. And the race is on. You know, pace of rollout is probably the most precious of any measure. And then, of course, there's cost. We've got to hit the right cost metrics. And that pragmatic regulation will help drive the right cost of our devices. And then it's working with other nations like the UK is to roll out that same mindset around regulation globally. So we remove those barriers and allow us to roll out hundreds and thousands of devices through this century.
Well, I wanted just to end by asking you about this potential rollout, the roadmap and potential timeline. And I'm aware that people have been asking fusion scientists forever how long until it becomes on the grid. And, there's always been debate about that for a long time. But it's a lot more real now. It's you can actually see it happening. But how do you see this roadmap playing out between now and, I don't know, 2050, 2060? Just sketch this out a little bit for us.
Well, we started with the pilot plants in the mid-2030s. And then we're building a global supply chain. So working with partner companies in the US, in Japan, in Korea. So we're ready to roll out at scale. And then it's about making these designs as modular as we can to allow that fast rollout. And adoption from countries like Singapore is a great example, or Japan, who are desperately pulling on fusion and want to be an early adopter. Then it's around just the pace of rollout. How many machines can we get out there in the late 2030s into the 2040s? And we need to set some aspirational goals for the percentage of our global energy demand that's being fulfilled by fusion in the future. I won't claim this one as my own, but I liked it when I heard it at a recent panel event. A goal of 70% of our energy from fusion by 2070. Now, 70% sounds like a crazy high number, right? But if you break it down, actually, that's saying half of that from the fusion that happens in the sun. So 35% from solar and 35% from fusion here on Earth. And that's what we need to drive. Because we're reminded constantly about the dead end that we're in from a climate change point of view. And we're reminded constantly about these incredible future demands of energy from developing nations and new industries like AI? We have to answer that question. And so we have to get behind fusion development as companies and governments to really drive it forward, really put meaningful amounts of capital behind this and push and make it happen. And while we think about getting it on the grid, there are lots of things that can get power on the grid. Solar and wind are really good for that. You have a storage question. Fusion is great because it can provide that power when the wind doesn't blow. But we've also really got to be thinking about the demands from industry, as we talked earlier, because they are the ones that will continue to be long-term polluters. And fusion is a brilliant answer for, from petrochemicals through to sustainable fuel production, through to how we produce metals and other products in the future. And with that, you know, we can really take a big chunk out of our decarbonisation goals by 2050 and then accelerate beyond.
Well, it's really exciting, and we'll just have to see how that develops over the next couple of decades. That's all we've got time for today. But Warwick Matthews, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, thanks, Gavin, and look forward to the next one.
You've been listening to the podcast from the Foundation for Science and Technology. My guest was Warwick Matthews, Chief Executive Officer of Tokamak Energy. The Foundation for Science and Technology is holding an event on the UK Fusion Programme on the 27th of March 2024. Details of that event, which is free to attend, can be found on our website at www.foundation.org.uk/events. Also on our website, you'll find details of all our other events, our journal, our Future Leaders programme, and all previous editions of this podcast. Until the next time, goodbye.